everyone's frankly fed up with it. None least Bruce Williamson, who's from Rail Future, the campaign for better rail travel, who joins us now. Bruce, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you.
I, as I always say when we talk about these strikes, if you live on the Southern Rail routes, lots of people who are travelling, commuting from the southern counties into London in particular, use those routes. How can you tell when it's a strike day and when it's not a strike day? Because its service is pretty bad either way, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? And, you know, we can sort of joke that, you know, if you lived in the southern region, you might want to sort of move house. But actually, I think some people are seriously considering that. You know,
yeah, I think people have actually done it. People have people have lost their jobs. I keep hearing people talking about how, you know, even from 3-4 o'clock onwards in the day, they're constantly just checking which trains are running, are trains running, will they be able to get home, how do they pick their kids up from childcare and the like. I mean, it's just not a way to live your life.
It's not, and we have concerns. Obviously, a group like Rail Future, you know, we want a bigger, better railway, and it's damaging the reputation, not just of Southern, because obviously their reputation is pretty bad as it is, but just the credibility of rail in general as a mode of transport, you know, is damaged by this, and people start to think, well, can I rely on the train? And we want people to be able to rely on the train, because obviously, you know, the railway is good for the country. It's green, it's, you know, it's a much better way of travelling than having policing cars.
Well, you say that, I've got to be honest with you. I mean, I'll go out of my way to do any journey that's not by train, unless it's going to Heathrow or Gatwick, when I know it's by far the quickest way and you're not going to risk the traffic. But as you say, it's only if it's going to be reliable. And a lot of the time, people, especially over the Christmas period, people get stuck with, you know, the worst, the most depressing words in the English language, the rail replacement bus service. I mean, especially if you're travelling, you know, you might think, oh, it's great. So, you know, it's only 30 quid. I can get it really on a cheap rail fare and I can upgrade for a fiver or a tenner to go on first class Saturday. Absolutely great. You go off for the weekend somewhere. You come back on the Sunday. It takes you 15 hours to get back sitting on a coach. And this is the thing, isn't it? Does this have, as you say, a damaging, long-lasting impact on people just not relying on the train?
Well, undoubtedly as well. I mean, it's interesting, you know, that I agree with this. There's no doubt that that passengers, you know, shudder when it's rail replacement bus, you know. But it's interesting because it illustrates the point that people prefer trains. I think politicians make the mistake of thinking that buses and trains are kind of equivalent.
Yes.
Because they sort of do the same job, don't they? But actually, when it comes to the crunch, you know, the train is much more attractive to passengers, assuming it runs reliably, you know.
And you've got a seat.
It's much better at attracting people out of cars.
Yeah, I mean, that's the issue, isn't it? Again, we've had talk only in the beginning of the new year, as we do every year. There are two guaranteed stories. There's New Year's on us, and then there's the big row over the cost of rail fare increases. Look, I've got a lot of sympathy for people who have to spend, you know, thousands of pounds on their rail fares across the country. But the reality is, their journeys to and from work are being subsidised by taxpayers in a way that our journeys in cars aren't subsidised by taxpayers. There comes a point where, you know, if you want to live miles from your job, and but okay, you may say that's all you can afford to do, but for a lot of people it's because they want to live in a house, not a flat, or a bigger house than they could afford nearer their job. We're basically being asked as taxpayers to subsidise other people living further from work by subsidising their rail fares.
Well, that's true, I suppose, but there is also an argument that that motorists are subsidised as well. You know,
not with all the taxes on petrol. Motorists aren't remotely subsidised.
Yeah, they are, I'm afraid. They don't pay a lot of the externalities. They don't pay for the health care for people who are, you know, injured in road traffic accidents. The roads locally are paid for out of council tax, not out of road tax, and so on and so on. You know, we'll save that one for another day.
I have to pay to park outside my own house. I'm sure that's covering my share, thanks.
It may or may not be. But, I mean, you know, I agree with you that the rail system is subsidised. I think the rail strikes illustrate how badly we need a railway, how the big cities cannot operate without a functioning rail network. And if you imagine we shut down the railways tomorrow, everyone would be forced onto the roads, and it would be absolute gridlock. So you know, rail is an essential driver of the economy, and I think we need to look at the sort of bigger picture about how we all benefit from a railway system that functions.
Yes, no, absolutely. Again, it's people not being on the roads that does everyone else the benefit. Look, I've never driven to and from work. God, I mean, I think I did maybe once briefly in a job that was about 20, 30 years ago. I can't think of anything worse, actually, than doing that. But the railways, it's it's about, as you say, it's about reliability. But in terms of who to blame on this Southern Rail strike, it is quite painful. We're told by the independent safety regulator that it's absolutely fine. It's safe. It's not, there's no issue with the drivers operating the doors. We know that, I think, on like 30% of railways in this country, that is the case already. And indeed, ASLEF and RMT have done deals as unions with the train companies where they've accepted this as safe in other parts of the country. And yet we're also told, you know, the Southern Rail, they're raking it in. They provide a terrible service. They don't provide enough staff. They're relying on overtime and goodwill a lot of the time. And actually a plague on both their houses is a view of a lot of commuters.
Well, yes, I think that's right. You know, Southern certainly are at fault because they simply haven't got enough drivers, you know, and that's absolutely their fault. You mentioned that Southern are raking it in. Well, actually, they're not, because the government is taking the ticket revenue on Southern. So Southern, in a way, can afford to dig in their heels because it doesn't matter if the trains don't run, because, you know, they're not losing revenue. They're sort of paid a fixed fee by the government. It's an unusual franchise, Southern. And I think really that there's sort of government motivation behind this to sort of, you know, force through driver controlled operation or driver only operation, which, you know, I think is inevitable. It's certainly, as you quite rightly say, it's happening on other lines. It's been introduced gradually over the years, and it's hard to understand why Southern is such a sticking point. I think the issue for the unions and the guards is that they feel it's sort of a slippery slope, a thin end of the wedge to getting rid of the guards altogether. You know, Southern will say, well, you know, we're going to continue to have guards or whatever they're called, conductors or on-train supervisors. But, you know, under exceptional circumstances, if we can't get the staff, then we'll just run it with a driver only. And then these exceptional circumstances start to become a bit more routine, and then suddenly say, well, actually, we can run the trains all right without staff at all. And, you know, we eventually get rid of guards altogether.
Yeah, but again, like Docklands Railway in East London, that runs without guards and without drivers. The reality is we are moving into this direction, aren't we?
Well, to some extent, that's true. I mean, it's been a long time since I went on a Docklands Light Railway train. They used to have sort of onboard supervisors, didn't they, who didn't actually drive the trains. I don't know whether that's still the case routinely. But, you know, it's a legitimate concern from a sort of safety point of view, you know, and for the practicality of managing the railway. You know, what happens if something goes wrong? What happens if you turn up at a lonely station, there's no one at the station, there's no one on the train? That sort of thing. I think those are the issues that sort of need to be thrashed out from a sort of customer, not just a customer safety point of view, but a customer reassurance point of view.
But the reality is, we kind of wander around the public streets sort of quite well at night, you know, without people helping us. I mean, I don't feel the need to speak to a train driver or an operator or a conductor or anyone to go over. And I get, you know, tube trains to and from work every day. I mean, I do sort of wonder about this. Like, so what for a very small number of people, we're going to have hugely large numbers of staff available in case one person needs some help. I can see both sides on this, but I'm wondering, who do we expect to pay for it?
Well, indeed, yeah. I mean, that's the other thing we've got to recognise, is that, you know, everything comes at a cost, doesn't it? But, I mean, if you can imagine the sort of the sensationalist tabloid headline, if they got rid of the guards and they got rid of the staff at the station and someone was stabbed and murdered and the union say, well, you know, if only you'd kept the staff there. And I think there's a debate that needs to be had about what we actually want from the railway and you know, how much we're prepared to pay for it, I suppose.
Yes, no, exactly. And again, the debates about the healthcare, they're like, you know, we are paying for it. And we know that certainly in Western European countries, most people are experiencing much lower rail fares by a huge factor. But then they are highly subsidised, far more subsidised than they are in this country. Although, of course, since we've the privatisation, supposedly, of our rail network, we pay even more subsidies than we did when we were paying for an entirely nationalised railway. Utterly bizarre times. Bruce Williamson, always a pleasure to speak to you, sir. He's from Rail Future, the campaign for better rail travel. You can't disagree with that, can you?